Merlin feels slightly better with his hands untied. It's not exactly a huge consolation in the grand scheme of things, but it's psychologically less demeaning, and he can finally turn the pages of his books without awkwardly contorting his hands. It's harder to stop himself scratching at a tag with his hands untied, however. He can't help but dig his fingers into the tender skin, trying to relieve that unbearable itch underneath the cold metal. It doesn't work, and he only ends up scratching the area red and raw. Arthur notices one day and looks horribly guilty. He doesn't say anything, but at afternoon, he sets a pot of E45 on the floor of Merlin's cell. The cream eases the itch a little, and Merlin's grateful. The rest of the time, he just has to rely on the books as a distraction. He's finished Jane Eyre and most of the Sherlock Holmes stories, and the odd but enjoyable Washington Square. He chooses Lady Chatterley's Lover over Billy Budd for his next one, mainly because he read about the fuss surrounding its publication before. He's still not quite prepared for what he finds within, and his first thought is to tease Arthur about it when they're eating dinner the next day. Arthur's moved one of the chairs into Merlin's cell at his request, so he doesn't have to sit on the bed all the time. He's also dragged the table over to the edge of the cell, so that he can eat meals in almost the same space. It's strangely domestic if Merlin blocks out the huge steel bars between them. "So, Lady Chatterley's Lover," Merlin says as he eats the last bite of Arthur's vegetarian moussaka. Arthur's becoming a dab hand at meat-free cooking, he has to admit.
"What about it?"
Merlin grins. "Are you trying to tell me something?"
"Eh?"
"It's a dirty book, Arthur." Arthur scoffs.
"Yeah, maybe people thought it was dirty back in the olden days, when everyone was still fainting at the sight of women's ankles. But now..."
"It's still pretty dirty," Merlin says, not bothering to moderate the teasing tone in his voice.
"I didn't know you were such a delicate flower. Is it making you blush, Merlin?"
Merlin doesn't say anything in response, just opens the book to the page he earmarked and hands it through the bars. Arthur reads for several seconds, and then, hilariously, his cheeks turn pink.
"Wow, okay, that's... yeah."
"I didn't know you were such a delicate flower, Arthur," Merlin says innocently.
"All right, shut up. I didn't know. It's not like I intentionally bought you porn."
"It's not porn!" Merlin protests, and Arthur laughs.
"Defending its literary merits now."
"You're just a prude."
"Definitely. I'm all for a more prudish society, actually. I'm sick of seeing women flaunting their ankles all over the place."
Merlin laughs, long and loud. It's not the first time Arthur's made him laugh, and he's given up trying to suppress it. He's just accepted the fact that it's inescapably weird to be laughing at jokes his captor makes, and moved on. It takes more energy to pretend he doesn't find Arthur funny. Arthur gets this peculiar kind of look in his face when he makes Merlin laugh. Sort of proud, sort of bashful. It's vaguely endearing. Occasionally finding Arthur endearing is another thing Merlin's just had to make his peace with, along with the way he can't help but admire the curve of Arthur's body, the grace of his movements. Merlin justifies this by telling himself he was attracted to Arthur back when he was just hot but creepy. It's only residual attraction from before, he didn't choose it. Only an idiot would claim that Arthur wasn't good-looking on a purely aesthetic level. It doesn't mean anything deeper than that. They banter back and forth a bit more before Arthur asks him if he's still in any pain from the week before. "My side's still a bit tender, but the bruise has gone down loads. Look." Merlin's raising his t-shirt before he even thinks about whether it's a good idea to be exposing his skin like that. He doesn't miss the way Arthur's eyes flicker as he glances over. But then any arousal on his face fades into grimness.
"It still looks bad,"
Arthur says, and his anger in his voice is clearly not for Merlin. "I've had worse," Merlin says. He already told Arthur about the riot cop and the other times things had turned bad at protests. Arthur knows this isn't the first beating he's ever taken. But his attempts to placate Arthur don't seem to help.
"You shouldn't have had it at all."
Are you admitting that magicals like me don't deserve the persecution you Oxo lot throw at us?
Merlin asked wryly. They're not my lot, and Arkstone isn't like that.
It is, though, Merlin says.
No, look, Val and Senrid are loose cannons. They don't represent the rest of us,
Arthur says. Arthur, you act like their presence here wasn't even connected to you and your job, Merlin says, frustrated. It's not a coincidence that your father chose Val and Senrid for Arkstone. The whole institution's rotten.
Arkstone isn't. Any company that organizes a kidnapping is rotten, and you well know it. The Institute's not exactly a paragon of virtue either,
Arthur points out defensively.
Weren't they funding terrorism back in the 70s?
There were long-standing rumors that the Institute had secretly funneled money to pro-magical terrorist groups in its early days. Mullen doesn't doubt that it's possible. Yeah, maybe they were, and that was wrong. But we're 40 years on, Arthur. The Institute's changed with the times. Arkstone clearly hasn't.
I know that Arkstone doesn't always promote the best policies.
Stop being so mealy-mouthed about it. You know damn well what they do. Don't try to soften their image. It's sickening. He gets to his feet, walking over to the bars, irritation mounting within him. All of his previous questions about Arthur's motives are swirling around his mind, and he's annoyed by how none of it makes sense. The worst part is, Arthur, I don't even think you agree with them. You don't seem to believe half the company policy you spout, and you're hardly fervent in your defense of the anti-magical cause. I could almost understand it more if you really were a fully paid zealot, but this wishy-washy crap is just fucking confusing.
You don't know anything about...
I know enough! I've met plenty of bigots in my life, and your heart just isn't in it, I can tell that much. Which begs the question, what the fuck are you doing here?
I am doing the job that I was asked to do,
Arthur says doggedly. Merlin shakes his head, infuriated. Not good enough. Kidnapping isn't a job, it's a crime. You should have said no. The next words are almost ripped out of Arthur's mouth, like they physically pain him.
I couldn't say no. I owe a debt.
Merlin laughs, loud and mean. To who? Your father? He owes you a debt, Arthur. He fucked up your childhood, warped your mind, made you feel worthless enough to accept whatever crap he threw at you.
You know nothing about my dad,
Arthur spits. And now he's got you defending him. He really did a number on you, you know that? Takes a special kind of screwed up to stay loyal to the man who spent his whole life abusing you. Merlin knows he's being cruel, and a part of him winces to see Arthur's face crumple, the usual mask slipping to reveal someone who looks as hurt and vulnerable as an abandoned child. But the other part of him doesn't care. Who says he has to be nice to the man holding him hostage? Who says he has to care about the fact that Arthur had been mistreated and manipulated by the person who raised him? It's not Merlin's fault that Arthur's dad was a bastard. Why does he have to always be the one taking the high road?
So he carries on instead.
You're an idiot if you think this'll make him respect you. He'll never respect you. He'll just dangle the possibility that one day he might, so he'll carry on doing what he says.
You should stop now,
Arthur says, and he gets to his feet like he might do something about it. Make me, Merlin says hotly. Suddenly Arthur's unlocking the door, thrusting himself inside the cell. Merlin tenses, but he raises his chin, determined not to be intimidated.
You shouldn't talk about things you don't understand,
Arthur hisses. You know I'm right, Merlin says maliciously. That's why you're so mad.
Shut up, Merlin.
Arthur's voice is low and dangerous, and Merlin knows he should stop now, but there's a part of him that just wants to keep going. You know I'm right, he repeats, lip curling into a sneer.
I said shut up,
Arthur growls. Suddenly Merlin finds himself pushed back against the cell bars, Arthur pinning him in place, a hand on his throat. For a second or two, they just breathe, the both of them. Arthur so close to him, he can smell the sharp tang of his sweat, feel the heat radiating off him in waves. He waits for the blow, but it never comes. Arthur seems frozen in place, eyes burning into Merlin's. The hand on his throat isn't gripping.
It's just resting there against his exposed neck. It's almost possessive.
Merlin can feel his heart hammering in his chest. He imagines he can feel Arthur's own pulse throb at the point where their skin makes contact. He can't keep holding Arthur's gaze. It's too intense. He feels like his whole being is on display. He takes a deep, juddery breath, and Arthur's eyes flicker momentarily down to his chest, like he wants to see the way Merlin's frame expands and contracts with every inhale and exhale. Time stops for a minute.